Welcome to the most recent edition of Microbrew, Brewer's Chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the podcast, and on the other line we have Todd Rosiak, Brewer's reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He covered almost every game this week at American Family Field when the Brewers took on the Cardinals and the Blue Jays, and it was a little harrowing, but the Brewers won four of the seven games. They went into the week tied for first place with the Cardinals. They come out of the week with a one-game lead in first place. Not too shabby, considering kind of, I guess, when you watched it, you didn't feel like they were necessarily on a roll or anything, but a great week for the Brewers. After we talked to Todd, I have an interview with Brewers reliever Hobie Milner, a really interesting guy, having a phenomenal year, I think, leading the Brewers in appearances with that funky sidearm delivery from the left-hand side. He's been very effective, and he's got an interesting story. His dad played briefly in the big leagues at age 18 for two games, and that's an interesting part of his story. He also wants to get his daughter to all 30 Major League Baseball parks, all the parks, so I think that's kind of cool, too. I think you'll enjoy that after I talk to Todd. So, Todd, we'll start with kind of the big picture, looking at the standings. I still can't vouch for this team as a powerhouse, as a team that I think can make noise in the postseason. But, you know, I go back to like June 12th. They've got like seven hits in all but two games. You know, a lot of double digit hits. They pounded out 13 on Sunday, bouncing back from an early deficit to score 10 runs. I feel like this team might be just a difference maker away from being a consistent, credible offense, but they have been pretty consistent. I don't know. Is it weird that I just am not all in on a really good week of baseball? It just doesn't feel quite right. Am I missing the forest for the trees? What would you say about that?
No, I mean, definitely there's concerns. I would say, you know, a winning homestand is nothing to be upset about. Clearly the thing that, you know, you hit on that I agree with is that they're at least one hitter away. And I think we all know that David Stearns is probably beating the bushes in the background already, trying to lay the groundwork, looking into potential pickups, that sort of thing, because it's his MO. It's what they do. And with the news now that Hunter Renfro is going to be gone for another 10 days to 2 weeks, maybe the sense of urgency is going to be there a little bit more to try to get something done sooner than later. Nothing against Jonathan Davis, but you're going to have to trot him out most days in center field right now, because Tyrone Taylor is going to have to play right. And all of Jonathan Davis has hit okay so far. I think over the course of a long haul, you definitely would look for a more impactful type player. There's improvements that you figure will be made and could be made. The time frame is obviously the question. They've had games where they've had good innings, big innings, seemingly more so in the early parts of the games. And then the concerning part for me would be the offense just goes to sleep after that. The game against Toronto on Saturday was a good example of that. Five quick runs and then nothing the rest of the way, and very nearly paid the price for that. Josh Hader gave up that run in the ninth inning, but then was able to shut it down. So there's definitely going to have to be improvements made. The health is always the big thing. Getting all the big guns back is going to be important. Whenever Hunter Renfro is able to come back, that's obviously going to be a big bat. But for the here and now, it's just going to have to kind of be piecemeal together as it has been. I guess if there's good news, the pitching reinforcements are starting to come back now. Trevor Gott, Yandel Gustave are back. Brandon Woodruff will make a start Tuesday for the first time in over a month, which is obviously great news for the rotation. So, Brandon Woodruff joked about getting the band back together. That was before we knew about Hunter Renfro, but it's getting close. And we'll see what happens from here forward, and we're, you know, a little over a month away from the trade deadline. So I would imagine those types of discussions are going to be picking up not only with Milwaukee, but across the league.
Yeah, I'm sure most teams probably feel this way, but you're talking about the injuries. It feels like every time they get close to getting back to full strength, something else goes wrong. Somebody else goes down. Colton Wong is about to be back. You mentioned Woodruff, who's coming back on Tuesday. Got Gustave. They're able to sort of build back up to full strength, and then they lose Hunter Renfro, who'd been mashing the ball, you know, homered in every game in that last series in Cincinnati before coming back to Milwaukee, and then missed a bunch of games in this Blue Jays series. I don't know if I think that David Stearns is going to necessarily make a move in the short term with the trade deadline a month away. I got to think that he probably would have made it already. I feel like once they get to the trade deadline, you'll have more teams that are clearly out of it, more teams that are desperate to make a deal, as opposed to the situation right now where I feel like the price is just going to be a little bit higher because you'll have teams that are a little bit more reluctant to part with what's out there. Have you looked at the landscape to see who or what? I mean, obviously a center fielder, if there is a center fielder who could be had, you know, I don't know if there is. Have you looked at who might be a possible fit for the Brewers or like how they might go about improving this roster?
I haven't looked too closely up because like you said, it is kind of early, a little bit of a spoiler. I believe my, our fearless intrepid coworker, Kurt Hoag, is going to be working on a trade scenario story for the off day on Monday. So be on the lookout for that.
Yes. I love it.
But I mean, necessarily the Brewers don't have to trade for a center fielder. You know, you could slide Tyrone Taylor over and have him play there every day and then, you know, try to find somebody for right field or, you know, there's various ways you can do it. But, you know, it may very well be too soon. But as we saw last year, the Brewers struck gold by moving quickly with Willy Adames. Clearly, that was at the end of May. And it was a deal that had been in the works for a while. But, you know, maybe if you strike while the iron's hot, you got some talks going, you can jump in and get a guy before everybody else is able to put their offers in. You know, the name that I keep seeing and that keeps getting bandied about would be an Andrew Benintendi. And that would be interesting from a number of respects. But I guess we're just going to have to wait and see. And, you know, maybe the Brewers do stand pat in the short term and Hunter Renfroe can make a relatively quick return and they can have all their guns back in place offensively. But there's no question this team has just been decimated by injuries since early in the season. One other little addendum as far as bats being added to the lineup. In another week, we probably will be seeing Pedro Severino come back, I believe, July 3rd. So next Sunday in Pittsburgh is the day that he's finally eligible to come back from his 80-game PED suspension. And, you know, not to say that that's going to be a world-beater type of acquisition or addition, but it's a power right-handed bat that gives them arguably more pop than either one of their catchers have currently. So if the Brewers follow through on their what they've been doing so far in the minor leagues with him and playing him a little bit at first base, there's the potential of getting a little bit more pop in the lineup that way. So it should be interesting to watch how that all plays out and whether the Brewers indeed activate him on July 3rd, which would be the first day he would be eligible.
Benintendi has played center field in his career, but not in the last few years. He's probably not a natural center field fit, and my mind keeps going to what the Braves did last year at the trade deadline before they go on that World Series run. You know, you can't just replicate that and expect the same results, but they brought in a whole bunch of outfielders. They basically remodeled their team. None of those guys were world beaters by themselves, at least on paper, but they all played a huge role in their postseason run, and man, it just feels like that would be a heck of a shot in the arm for a team like the Brewers. But you talked about Woodruff coming back on Tuesday. I feel like that is huge, 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 huge for what feels like a starting rotation that is just barely keeping it together. I mean, we haven't seen Adrian Hauser at his best this year. I still maintain that he's just a very defensive dependent guy, but I could say that and then see what happened against the Blue Jays on Friday where balls were pounded left and right against him in a one really big inning. Eric Lauer has not been as good as he was earlier in the season. That could be just a little regression of the mean, or it could be just, you know, bad luck, bad timing, whatever. And then I feel like they're just barely holding it together outside of that. Jason Alexander, got to admire what he's done. He puts a lot of guys on base, though. I don't know if that's sustainable for the course of the season. And Chichi Gonzalez, you feel good when you can get four innings out of the guy. He's given him everything you'd expect. But again, that's not necessarily a long-term thing. Getting Woodruff back, I feel like, is really going to settle things down. Do you imagine it's similar to that? I feel like the pitching needs that boost right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think most people would agree that even before he was hurt, Brandon Woodruff was not pitching at the level that I think everybody expected him to pitch coming into the season. But a Brandon Woodruff, even at 75% effectiveness, I would argue is probably better suited for the rotation and a better option than some of the other choices that you might have. And that, again, that's not to put, not to knock Jason Alexander. It's not to knock Chichi Gonzalez, because both of those guys, both of those guys have done a great job in what they've been asked to do. Jason Alexander, particularly, he's been able to step in for an extended period here. And, you know, it's nothing sexy. It's a lot of ground balls. It's a lot of contact, but he's kept the Brewers in games every time he's gone out there. And Chichi Gonzalez, for all the guff that he and the Brewers got on the heels of his two starts, he's done exactly what they've needed him to do, which is about four innings, keep the team in the game. You know, looked a little bit hairy on Sunday with the first inning runs, but the offense stepped up to the plate, so to speak, and answered the challenge and got the lead back for him pretty quickly, and he held it the rest of the way for his time out there. So, you know, Brandon Woodruff definitely is champing at the bit to get back out there. It's been kind of a weird deal where we all thought it was going to be real quick, and it should have been relatively quick with the ankle, but then the Raynaud syndrome comes on, and you know, not having any feeling in those fingers. It's just a strange deal and not something you hear about a lot in baseball, but looks like he's got it to a manageable point now. Medication's working, and that's the best you can hope for. So I would expect when he starts on Tuesday, it sounds like the wraps will be pretty much off of him. You know, probably I would guess, all things being considered, a 90 or so pitch outing would be realistic to expect out of him. And then hopefully kind of gets his feet under him and gets going from there, and hits, you know, the team gets into the All-Star break with the majority of its projected starting rotation pitching well. And by that point, too, you would hope that Aaron Ashby is back in the mix as well.
If you had told me that Jason Alexander would give up two runs in the first inning, Chichi Gonzalez would give up three runs in the first inning, and the Brewers would win both of those games, I would not have believed you. There have been some dicey moments in the four wins this week, including, like you mentioned, having a 5-0 lead, giving up four back, and having to hold on for a little bit of dear life at the end with Josh Hader giving up a run. But hey, they all count the same. They are wins. And the series against St. Louis, it was really fun having the Blue Jays in town, a team that the Brewers don't see, an absolute lineup of mashers. I think the Brewers are pretty fortunate and should be pretty proud of themselves for getting two or three in that series, especially after the Friday night game. But the Cardinals are really kind of a thing that I'm keeping a closer eye on for obvious reasons. These two teams are tied in the season series this year. And they don't face off again until August, and there's a chance that they'll be neck and neck in the standings as they are right now throughout the course of the season. Six and six wins and losses tells you that they're pretty evenly matched. I still don't know if I can say safely I think the Brewers are as good as the Cardinals. I mean, I certainly would have said going into the year that I think the Brewers are as good or better than the Cardinals, but I just, the Cardinals having Goldschmidt and Arenado clicking on all cylinders in the middle of the lineup is something the Brewers do not have. The Cardinals pitching is not as good as the Brewers, but it's not bad. You know, Miles Mikolas has been very, very good this year. Not Corbin Burns level, but close enough. And then after that, I don't know. I feel like the Cardinals stack up decently. Now, they might lose Jack Flaherty. They did just lose 2 or 3 to the Cubs, which has allowed the Brewers to take the lead on them in the standings. But what do you think when you see the Cardinals? You saw them a lot this year. Do you think these two teams are just dead even? Would you give the edge to one or the other? How would you evaluate?
Yeah, I mean, just based off of what we've seen so far and looking at the records, I think they are dead even. Each team holds advantages in certain areas. You mentioned the offense for St. Louis versus the pitching for Milwaukee. I think that's very true. That's very real. You know, Jack Flaherty has not been pitching well in the little time that he's been back. Let's be clear. Steven Matz, who was signed and was supposed to be a difference maker for them, he's been out for extended period with, I believe, a shoulder or elbow injury. That's a big loss for them. They always seem to get somebody to plug in and at least perform relatively well. You know, Miles Mikolas has been carrying it for them. Dakota Hudson's been pretty decent. Their bullpen, they always seem to find pieces there. Their bullpen's been pretty good overall. So I would fully expect them to be in the hunt with the Brewers right down to the wire, and also to be somewhat aggressive going into the trade deadline as well. You know, the moves that they made last year at the trade deadline weren't super inspiring and ultimately didn't help them over the hump in the end. Maybe they get a little bit more aggressive this year, but, you know, offensively, Goldschmidt has just been unbelievable. And Arenado really good as well. And what's interesting is their offense has been so good. We're getting very little out of Tyler O'Neill, who's had a lot of injury problems, and getting basically nothing out of Yachty. And I don't know how much offense people were expecting out of Yachty, but he's been injured for a lot of the season as well. So guys like Brendan Donovan have been stepping up. Harrison Bader's had a really good year for them this year.
Nolan Gorman.
Gorman stepped in and been tremendous. And let's not forget Tommy Edmund. I mean, that guy, yeah. It looks like he's kind of the next Matt Carpenter, not as far as power yet, but just a guy that they brought through the system, plugged him in, and he's going to be a thorn in the Brewers' side for 10 years. You know, that's just the kind of player that he looks like right now. So kudos to them. They consistently find a way to develop guys and get them to perform at the major league level. So should be interesting. It should be a fun ride and a fun two-team ride. I don't really see these other three teams below them in the standings making any sort of challenge here the rest of the way. I would think they would mostly all be in sell mode.
Yeah, if Dylan Carlson and Tyler O'Neill get back up to speed, the Cardinals are very, very scary. And that's different from the Brewers, where I think I don't see guys that are just like, well, you're one or two guys getting back on track away. It feels like they don't have really any difference makers, whereas the Cardinals already have two of them and could have more, especially as Nolan Gorman gets better. Tommy Edman, you mentioned, is just so annoying. So that's going to be an interesting race to watch. Of course, that is at this point, I think it's safe to say, the only competition in the NL Central for the Milwaukee Brewers, barring something pretty dramatic. One thing that has gone the Brewers' way is Andrew McCutchen seems to be back swinging a pretty good bat. And I think at this point we've seen enough to know that he's you know, he's just going to be okay. But he has been hot lately, a lot of multi-hit games and showing a little bit of power again. And it's interesting because as we get closer to the trade deadline, you know, that's probably a guy who stands to lose opportunities if they find somebody who maybe could get some DH opportunities. Outfield seems like an area where you might upgrade, and that seems like it could come at the expense of Andrew McCutchen, especially if you're facing a right-handed pitcher. But now he's hitting well again. So that's interesting. You know, like that comes back to the bigger issue of where will the Brewers upgrade? Because they do have guys kind of at every spot. It's just that they're a little bit underperforming. So I don't know. Tell me if you've seen something from Andrew McCutchen that's different lately, or if you sense that maybe he's, I don't know, fully healthy now or something. What do you think about him lately?
I mean, honestly, it's probably just a matter of getting consistent at bats, playing consistently, being fully recovered from his bout with COVID, which sounded like was pretty bad. I would think that at this point of the season, the expectations would have been higher as far as his power numbers, his run production. But you don't know how badly he was set back by that whole deal with COVID, the few weeks he was out. And, you know, it takes time, obviously, to get back up to speed once you've been out. But he's obviously in a good place right now. He's swinging it with confidence. And I love watching him, honestly, for 35 years old and for a guy with a rebuilt knee, he can still fly getting down the line. He's so fast. And it's fun watching him run the bases as well. So, you know, getting him back and being kind of a difference maker, either, you know, when he was batting leadoff, obviously he's not anymore, but when he was very aggressive and good at getting on base. Now he's slotted down toward the, you know, 3-4-5 spot and is doing okay. Obviously the Brewers hope that continues, and we'll see what kind of reinforcements emerge in the meantime. But, you know, good signs, and they'll take everything they can get from anybody at this point offensively.
Keston Hira, I feel like his time is running out for the Brewers. It's not that he's like much worse this week or last week than he has been in the past. He did hit a really big home run recently that enabled the Brewers to beat the Reds. That home run against the lefty to make it 5-4. But you know, he's just not playing that much. And when he's in there, he's still, you know, the strikeouts are still there. He just doesn't look comfortable. Where are we at with him? You want to just like, do you think because he's still young and under control, the Brewers are just going to ride it and see what happens or what? What do you think comes next for him?
Yeah. I mean, they're not under any obligation or any pressure to necessarily move him or anything. Obviously it would behoove them to try to get to the bottom. And it's not like they haven't been trying to get to the bottom of what's been giving him trouble, which is hitting against left-handed pitching, which is just so bizarre. He's gotten a few hits here lately off of left-handed pitching. They've been playing him a little bit more against lefties, but certainly not what you would expect in the overall picture, what you'd hope for. You know, maybe Keston here is a guy that that benefits from a scenery change finally. He's miscast on this team defensively, obviously. There's not a lot of space for him at first base. He's not a true first baseman. His natural position really is second base, but as we've all seen, that experiment has not really gone that well. Not really a second baseman either. You know, maybe a part-time DH kind of guy. So he's really on a team that values versatility. He can do a little bit, but he's not really good at any of those spots. So who knows? Maybe he winds up being a piece in a trade that, you know, the Brewers bring somebody else on board and they feel like they can part with him. But you just feel like there's so much more in there offensively. And what he showed in 2019 was so tremendous that, you know, he really raised the bar so high. And now to see him struggling to get back to anything close to that has been, I'm sure, frustrating for the Brewers and for Brewer fans.
About to turn 26 years old in August, not over the hill by any means. There's still a little bit of time. I think you're right. I think the scenery change could benefit him. Maybe he'll be more comfortable in going back out west, out home, to home in California. I don't know. Certainly still pulling for the guy, but man, it's been a journey for him since that great season in 2019. Let's see. Before we get to three up, three down, had Rowdy Tellez on Sunday, two home runs against Toronto. The Brewers have had some power this week. They continue to hit home runs. Tyrone Taylor hit three home runs this week, and two of them were really significant home runs. Rowdy is the type of guy that, you know, I feel like would be really good if there were some bigger impact bats around him. I don't know if maybe that sells him short because he is capable kind of getting on these runs where he's pounding the ball and hitting for a lot of power. I feel like he'd be really good, like a really good number six hitter on a good playoff team. Am I wrong about that? Like, is it possible that he could be a guy who gets hot? He got hot in the last postseason and he was like basically their entire offense, him and Willy Adames. So am I shortchanging him am I right that he's just being asked to do a lot as a middle of the hitter guy? And he might be, you know, he'd be a really good hitter if he didn't have that burden on him.
Yeah. I mean, you could probably say that for a lot of guys too. This is really the first time I think that a team and an offense is really relying on him to be one of the main linchpins in an offense. And, you know, there's going to be ups and downs like any player in like any season. And it's been no different for him. He's back on a little bit of a hot streak, which is obviously good. And he's shown that in small sample sizes, he can literally carry an offense. But again, it comes with experience. And, you know, for a guy that really bounced in and out of the lineup over the course of his entire career up until this season with the Brewers, where he's gotten the lion's share of the playing time at first base, it's been kind of a struggle for him. And it's interesting talking to him and listening to him, how he kind of describes that all. He's just very grateful to the Brewers for finally being that team to give him the opportunity to play every day or most days. And I would argue he's definitely taking advantage of that opportunity. He's a cool guy. He's a fun personality. He's got some life to him. So a different sense of humor, all that kind of stuff. And clearly he's a fan favorite. You know, hearing him chant Rowdy in the stands, that's pretty cool, right, too, after, his game on Sunday. So he's definitely a guy I think that the fans can kind of rally around and a guy that could have a long, kind of productive, fruitful career here. The production obviously has to match that. But personality-wise, you know, blue-collar mentality, all that kind of thing, and Let's not beat around the bush. The build too, you know.
Yeah, big fella.
That endears him to a lot of people, just like Vogelbach when he was on the Brewers for those couple seasons. So, it's a cool story. If the Brewers can get one or two guys around him, obviously he's going to have more opportunities to swing the bat. But for right now, I would say the Brewers and Rowdy are pretty happy with what he's done to this point.
Rowdy Tellez has scored from first base on a non-home run three times this year. I may or may not be keeping track, as this does. This brings me probably an unhealthy amount of joy watching that man barrel around the bases. Love it. Okay, For a little bit closer view on what went on this week, we move to 3-up, 3-down. All right, I'm going to start, Todd. I'm going to go back to Monday. The Brewers won that game 2-0. Tyrone Taylor home run supplied all the offense. Corbin Burns was money. But this play in the ninth was pretty sweet. Omar Narvaez threw to catch Brendan Donovan stealing, and Luis Arias made this crazy acrobatic tag. He was ruled safe initially, and then upon replay overturned it, and that was a crucial out and obviously a very tight game. I believe Brendan Donovan reached base only because of a replay overturning the initial out call. So he replay saves him and then hurts him on basically consecutive pitches. But definitely one of those moments that you kind of forget about over the course of the season. Still a tremendous defensive play that might have saved the game. I don't know. You don't know how it develops from there. Brendan Donovan looks like a really good player down the line for St. Louis, and Brewers got away with a good one there on Monday.
Yeah, agreed. And I would follow up the very next play, if you remember that strikeout. And I believe it was the next play. Correct me if I'm wrong. Was it Caratini or Omar who made the throws?
Omar.
Yeah, Omar, yes. Chased down the ball, made a good throw to first base, and got the runner at first base as well. It was kind of back-to-back plays that he was involved in that were they were important in a crucial point in time in the game. It's fun to watch defense, isn't it? We get caught up in all the offense, but you know, sometimes those are the plays that make the difference. Speaking of defense, the other night, was it Friday night's game? I think it was the pick by short hop pick by Luis Urias at shortstop, and then the throw over the short hop pick that Rowdy made at first base, kind of that bang bang play. Just another reminder of how good these guys are, how good their hands are, and how good Rowdy is at first base. He's saved a lot of bad throws from his infielders this season. It seems like every game there's one or two throws that are short hopped in a tough manner by Jace Peterson, by Urias, and he's really adept at picking those at first base. As a former first baseman myself, I'm right-handed. Watching those lefties at first base, the way they move around the bag and the way they pick up those short hops, the good guys, it's fun to watch. It's like watching, for me, it's like watching a really sweet left-handed swing. And, you know, Rowdy, for all the hype he gets and the publicity he gets for his offense, and rightfully so, he's a pretty good, darn good first baseman as well.
Yeah, I think the Brewers got more than they bargained for out of Rowdy defensively. I don't think they expected this. He did commit his first error not that long ago, but for the most part, he's been so sure. You're absolutely right. Like, the Brewers aren't going to be known for rightful arms on the infield, Arias and Jace Peterson. Like, they're fine. They're solid. But, you know, there are going to be some short throws, and he does make them look awfully easy. We do take them for granted. So, yeah, and he's Rowdy himself has a tremendous arm. So maybe a little better defensively than we even thought. For me, I'm going to go to Wednesday night. That was a loss, but Trevor Kelly, oh my goodness. You know, the Brewers, they have guys like Hobie Milner and Trevor Gott, which are legitimate finds. I think they're probably guys like Trevor Kelly, Peter Strzelecki, Luke Barker. They've been hit and miss, but Trevor Kelly was awesome on Wednesday night. He came in with two runners on, Arenado and Goldschmidt due up. He gets through that inning without allowing a run. He then strikes out the side in his second inning. It's a one-run game at this point. It's 5-4, and he keeps the Brewers in it. They are unable to come back. Ninth inning rally fizzles, and the Brewers lose that game. But Trevor Kelly, one of those sidearmers, you know, like Hobie Milner, who's coming at it from the left-hand side. You know, he throws three quarters to basically sidearm, and he gets out of the jam with some impressive outs. So kudos to him, because it doesn't get much better than that, even in the context of a loss. Very impressive stuff from Trevor Kelly.
Well, maybe I'm jumping the gun a little bit, but I was going to look ahead a little bit to the two-game series in Tampa and the return of Willy Adames to Chop, which is going to be pretty cool to watch. Obviously, he's been a tremendous fit with the Brewers and a fan favorite and, you know, arguably team MVP and all that. But this is where he got going as a major leaguer and made a name for himself. And I think he's going to get a kick out of being back there. I'm sure the fans will love to see him. And it'll be fun to see how he does in those two games. Mike Brasso to a lesser extent, but he had a heck of a big moment for them in the postseason in 2020 as well. And I'm sure Rays fans finally remember him as well for the little bit of time he was on the team too. So welcome back for those guys. And, you know, from the opposite end of the spectrum, seeing Brett Phillips and all the success he's had down in Tampa, it's good for him. Great kid, and just ton of joy for living life and for playing the game of baseball. And cool to see him doing well. And as we were talking off air, it sounds like Fireisen and Rasmussen won't be able to pitch in that series due to injury, but two other ex-Brewers who have had their moments as well for Tampa Bay.
Yeah, Fireisen still has not allowed a run this year. He went through the first 24 innings without an earned run. He then was shut down at the start of June. And Rasmussen also having some success, but again, both those guys are hurt. I don't think that we will see them. But yeah, Willy Adames, the return to the Trop, where he famously could not hit the ball well. We'll see how that goes now that he's back. I'm sure that'll be a storyline, just as it was for Rowdy going up against his old teammates in Toronto this weekend. Ended well for Rowdy with the two home runs on Sunday. My third thing, Devin Williams, man. Like, we don't really talk about him that much. I mean, when we do, it's pretty, you know, like, high praise and all that. But, wow, he is special. And at the beginning of the year, I thought we might be in store for some regression. He had some really rough outings. In Baltimore comes to mind. I think the Brewers won all those games where he loaded the bases or allowed a bunch of runs. But he figured it out. His whip is better than it was last year. His strikeouts are slightly up. His walks are down. His hits are down. He hasn't given up any home runs. His FIP, his ERA, all of it down. I mean, we're talking 28 innings, but Devin Williams has been unbelievable. And in those moments when you need a big out, he's able to come in for one guy. He's obviously the eighth inning guy most of the time. You know, Josh Hader had a brief hiccup. He's still too dominant. Obviously, he's going to get the lion's share of the saves, all the save opportunities when he's available. But, man, Devin Williams, special season again. All-star Devin Williams, maybe? Question mark? I don't know if they'll have room for a setup guy, but if they do, guy's going to make it. He's been tremendous.
Yeah, definitely had a good year. Good comeback to this point, and good for him. I guess my last one would be, and I think we've talked about this before, but with each passing week, it strikes me more and more the job that Victor Caratini's done behind the plate. He's playing, I think, more than anybody would have expected him to. He's putting up more offense than Omar Narvaez. He's got more power than Omar Narvaez. He's a switch hitter. Defensively, he's done a really good job. And, you know, kudos to David Stearns and his staff for being able to land a guy of that quality in such a short amount of time after Pedro Severino was suspended. And now we have about a week to figure out what's going to happen when Severino is eligible, like we talked about, to come back. Do you carry three catchers on the roster? You know, there's guys with options remaining. Do you send one down? How do you handle that all? It's going to be interesting to see how they do the juggling. And, you know, we asked David Stearns last week about when Severino is available and in the first base situation. And he just kind of smiled and said, well, you guys know that we haven't been afraid in the past of playing guys out of position. So I think that might have answered our question in that the Brewers may very well keep all three guys on the roster and just try to figure out a way to get time in the field for either Caratini or Severino at first base. Caratini does have major league experience at that position. So just more juggling potentially for the Brewers. But again, just the job that Caratini has done, got very much an unsung hero on the team this year, I think.
Yeah, that'll be a storyline to watch here in the next couple of weeks, Severino, because, I mean, even if one of these guys play first base, that's fine. But, like, you know, how many at-bats do you want to take away from Rowdy Tellez, who we just mentioned is seeing the ball pretty well? A couple things we did not mention in 3 Up 3 Down, the City Connect jerseys. I don't know if I necessarily felt greater enthusiasm for them watching them in action as they were all weekend against the Blue Jays. But holy smokes, I was in the stadium, and they have sold very well. Every fan, it felt like, had some City Connect merchandise. I've seen it in the community just walking around.
Ding, ding, ding.
Oh, my goodness. And we talked about it.
That's why they did it. Brought in a lot of money, and it's going to continue to bring in a lot of money. That's why they make those.
Yeah, well, I wasn't disputing it, and they, believe me, they made money, because the merch is all over the place. So So congrats to the Brewers, I guess. They got what they wanted out of that. Also, the Little League home run on Thursday that got the Brewers down 2-0 with Jason Alexander on the hill. That was quite a sight. It was ugly. We can laugh about it because the Brewers, hey, they won the game. But, oh, man, if you didn't see footage of that, just about, you could have credited like 4 or 5 people with an error on the play. It was pretty special stuff. So, fortunately, the Brewers were able to bounce back and win that game. Okay, let's go back in time. We're doing this week's version of Remember When. Going back to the 70s. Here we go. Are you familiar with Robin Yount's brother, Larry Yount, at all, Todd?
I know the name. I don't know much about him otherwise. Did he have a cup of coffee in the majors, or he never made it? Or I think, was he his agent for a while then?
Yeah, all that's true. He was Robin Yount's agent. They have a very good relationship, and he was kind of the mentor. He's older than Robin Yount, sort of a mentor player sort of thing. But yes, he did have a cup of coffee, but it's weird. He is I believe, the only Major League Baseball player to enter a game but never throw a pitch. He was a pitcher. So never threw a pitch. So you go back to September 15th, 1971. This is kind of a crazy story. And it's been written a few times. Brian McTaggart had a great rundown for MLB.com. Great rundown. I want to say that popped earlier this year. I was thinking about it because of Alex Hall. The Brewers brought up catcher Alex Hall for a one-game opportunity. He didn't get in the game. He wasn't officially, in the box score or anything even. That happens all the time where players go down and then maybe you never see them again. But Larry Yount, his distinction is he did get in the game. September 15th, 1971, he's pitching for the Astros. They call him out of the bullpen. He kind of feels some stiffness in his elbow as he's warming up, gets taken out, but he'd been announced. So he was in the game and then out of the game, leaving with an injury. And he never gets back to the big leagues. He never pitches again. He never throws a pitch in big league baseball, despite at one point standing on the mound in the Houston Astrodome. It wasn't like a career-ending injury or anything. He just never got back. He ended up traded to the Brewers shortly after that. So he was in the Brewers organization. This is after they drafted Robin, who, of course, made his debut at 18 years old, very famously, in the early 70s and became, only the greatest player in franchise history. But, Larry retired from the game in 1975. He was only 21 at the time when he made his sort of half debut with the Astros. So, there was no reason to think he wasn't coming back. It was just this weird thing. He was a September call-up who spent the first 2 weeks fulfilling a military obligation, so he wasn't able to play right away, and so that's why it's September 15th, and maybe if he starts, he has his day in the sun of actually pitching if it starts September. So just a lot of things working against this guy. The story McTaggart wrote really sort of illustrated that he wasn't like bitter about it. It wasn't something that's, his life worked out. He had a very successful real estate career. Obviously Robin had a really good career and he was, he was his agent for a time. So it wasn't like Larry Yount came out behind. It's just a wild story that I wasn't aware of until very recently. So, not technically Brewers, but Brewers adjacent, the story of Larry Yount, the guy who appeared, but never actually appeared. I find it very humorous. All right, Todd, that is that'll about do it. But what about we got to get one last take from Todd here. So feed us your take of the week.
Ryan Braun sends it to left center and deep. Get up! Get out of here! Gone for Ryan Braun. He just hit a walk-off home.
My take of the week. How about this? We'll throw it out and ask what the over-under is going to be for rain delays in Pittsburgh while I'm there for the 4-game series.
Oh, especially this time of year, man.
What do you think?
I think the over-under should be 1 because, then the under is you somehow get through a 4-game series in June without experiencing a rain delay. I think that's naive, but, maybe. And then the over being 2. I'm going to take the over, though. If the over-under's 1, I'm going to say you're going to get at least 2 rain delays. Maybe the same night. But that's what I'm guessing for your trip to PNC.
Yeah, they in the Brewers clubhouse at American Family Field, they have a TV screen that has all kinds of updates and graphics, and one of the graphics that's up there leading into a road trip is what the expected weather is going to be each day, and we were laughing because shockingly all 4 days in Pittsburgh scattered thunderstorms each day. So it doesn't mean it's going to rain every day. It might not, maybe it's only one day, maybe it's none, who knows. We didn't have any rain delays the last time we were there, but that was early in the season. generally speaking, in this time of year, there is quite a bit of rain, and it's become a little bit of a running joke. It seems like I'm the one that always gets hammered on the road with rain, and especially in Pittsburgh, which I believe is the rainiest city in America. So we shall see. We can catch up at a later date and talk about that and laugh about it, and we'll see what actually happens. But there are worse places to be stuck than a ballpark, in a press box during a rain delay. I remember the good old days when Uke was traveling still, and the rain delays in Pittsburgh, and he would come out of the radio booth and just sit down with us and on press row and tell stories, and we'd laugh and stuff, and that was always a big highlight. Unfortunately, that's not the case anymore, so we have to make do with Jeff Levering and Lane Grindle instead. Just kidding. I love both those guys. But yeah, so we'll see. Fingers crossed, no major delays. But the likelihood of that happening in late June, early July, probably not very good.
I agree. The Pirates are plucky. This is a four game series. The Brewers need to make major hay against the rest of the NL Central because the Cardinals are going to be doing the same. And the Pirates are in third place in the Central, and they just added O'Neill Cruz, that 6'7" shortstop, who's going to be one of the best young players in the game eventually. Bly Madris, I think you say his name, an outfielder, young rookie outfielder who's also fared very well in the early going. Like they're not a terrible team. Rosney Contreras, he pitched today. He pitched on Sunday, and he looked good again. So, they're sneaky. They're sneaky. So it'll be an interesting series. Again, a 4-game series in Pittsburgh, following the 2 games in Tampa Bay against the Rays, just like the Blue Jays, ostensibly one of the best teams in the American League. They haven't been quite as on fire as people thought, but that's a tough road trip. Certainly visiting Tampa won't be easy. Todd, thanks for joining me, man. I'm going to move in now to my interview with Hobie Milner, Brewers reliever, and get to know him a little bit. Appreciate you taking the time, sir. We will chat with you again very soon.
Hobie One Kenobi, always a pleasure, JR.
Indeed, always a pleasure. I didn't ask him about Star Wars, about Kenobi. Foolish me. I know he's a fan, so I missed the boat on that, but did talk about a few other things. Just a couple notes. There was a fan going in the Brewers dugout that made things a little bit challenging audio-wise. Also, user error by myself made it more challenging audio-wise. I had some settings messed up, so you can hear everything. It's just there's a lot going on, so I apologize for that. But thanks for tuning in to Microbrew. Here is Hobie Milner. My guest is Hobie Milner, reliever for the Milwaukee Brewers. He's having a very good year, and actually, I haven't checked lately. I think you lead the team in appearances, so I have to think that's, if we're sitting here in the middle of June and that's the case, that would have caught you by surprise if I had told you at the beginning of the season. Midway through the season, you will be leading the Milwaukee Brewers in appearances, so how does that resonate with you if I say that right now?
It's pretty cool. I mean, throwing in as many games as I can has always been my goal, and fortunate enough to be healthy this year, and we've had some injuries out there, and I've had to kind of fill in some roles, and I think it's great.
So earlier this year, you have the 96 appearances without a decision. You've had a lot of decisions since then. Has anybody brought that up since? I know that's such the quirkiest of stats, and probably not something you're going to want to hang your hat on, the major league record for appearances without a decision. But as that has gone on, have people still brought that up, or is that ancient history at this point?
It's not quite ancient history. It comes up every couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Someone will bring it up, like, man, now you're 3-1.
Yeah.
Like, who would have thought? Yeah, I think it's just a testament to Council's faith in me, and he's put me in closer games and closer to bigger situations. And the decisions are going to happen more often that way.
One thing I did not know was that your dad played in the major leagues. And I heard you give an interview talking about how you didn't want to have the career that he had because he was disappointed with how it turned out. But I'm interested in his story a little bit because he plays at age 18. He only gets into 2 games, but he hit the ball very well in those 2 games. He had a triple and like 4 hits. So what can you just give me background on your dad and his journey to the majors?
Yeah, so he was a dual commit to go to Arizona to be a kicker.
Oh, wow.
For
football team, yeah.
Yeah, and play baseball. And he really wanted to go to college. And so he was supposed to be like a top 10 overall pick. And he slid down because of his dual commitment, and he said he didn't want to sign. And then the Blue Jays drafted him in the 7th round, same round I was drafted. And they offered him $170,000, which is more than I signed for.
Yeah.
And he signed in 78.
Right.
And it's more than I signed for. And 2012. But they were playing the Blue Jays, the Blue Jays were playing the Rangers like that weekend.
Okay.
And they said, you sign, we'll put you in the big leagues right now.
Oh, wow, okay.
And
so they did.
You're playing Arlington, yeah. And so he signed, and a couple days later, he was in Arlington, like 20 minutes from his house.
It's wild.
Yeah, they just packed the house with everyone from Fort Worth, pretty much.
Sure.
He played, and I think he played in another game, I think in Cleveland, or maybe... Yeah, he didn't play again that series, but he either played in Cleveland or back home for the Blue Jays.
Okay.
At the old stadium, I forgot what it was called. But, he went 4-for-9, and then they're like, all right, we're going to send you down. Went down to rookie ball. And,
right.
He was a diabetic, had a ton of injuries, never really clicked, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, things happen, but... it just didn't work out.
But it's a little bit like the Alex Hall story from earlier this year. It's sort of I don't want to say a coincidence, but unusual circumstances that brought him there.
Yeah.
Was he able to give you pretty good advice? I mean, it's such a different journey than the one you went on, but was he able to kind of help you navigate all that?
Yeah, I mean, he, even when he was done playing, he coached, did a lot of catching coaching, did a lot of like base coaching, all that kind of stuff. He really helped me with like the mentality of pitching, not necessarily the mechanical stuff, but from a catcher's perspective and a hitter's perspective. He was in the game for a long time, and he was a scout for the Cubs for 10 years after that. And I mean, he knows baseball, and I mean, having that much experience really helps.
Right. So you start with the Phillies, and have couple major league teams before Milwaukee, so I'll ask you the question that I'm sure everyone wants to know. What has Milwaukee told you to help you have as much success as you've had? Have you changed anything, or is there something that they introduced that you weren't aware of? That
I mean, you learn by doing.
Yeah.
And I've been given opportunity here, and last year I got a lot of opportunity, and that opportunity allowed me to find what works and what doesn't. And I think we figured out what worked last year, and now we kind of eliminated what doesn't work.
Sure.
So the long ball was killing me last year. I was throwing a lot of four seams, trying to get strikeouts, and I was getting the strikeouts, but it came at a cost. And so this year I'm really pitching away from that. I'm trying to get like more bottom of the zone. Strikeouts are kind of on the back burner, and I'm still going up every once in a while to try and get a strikeout when I need it, but for the most part, I'm staying down, I'm using off-speed, and I'm mixing it up.
It seems like a lot of effectiveness outside the zone seems to be a thing that works really well for you, right?
Yeah, I think being down in the zone allows me to, like, run the ball off a little bit.
Yeah.
It's a two-seam now, instead of last year, I was throwing all four-seam varieties. So, like, and the four-seam doesn't move horizontally as much, so... hitters see it and they can go to it, but now it's kind of moving, so they see it. Oh, it's a little bit out of the zone.
Yeah.
So I can kind of nibble a little bit more than I used to be able to. These guys were just spit on if it was just outside the strike zone.
I was going to ask you, you mentioned the long ball, and the first pitch you threw in 2020 is a walk-off grand slam when you were with the Angels. I don't want to salt in the wound or anything like that. What happened for you in that 2020 season? Because I know a lot of careers for guys, especially a lot of bullpen guys, I would think, that are, I don't want to say fringe, but guys that aren't necessarily top prospects or top of mind, that kind of, everything was thrown into flux for them because they're only committing to, each team is only committing to so many people.
Yeah.
So what happened for you during the pandemic? Was it pretty comfortable with the Angels, or how did things transpire?
So, I mean, COVID really helped me out.
Sure, okay, yeah.
Adding the 28-man roster was what got me on the team. I wouldn't have been on it if it was just 26.
Right.
I was one of the last two spots. And also, I had come off an injury in 2019. All right, like that offseason, I was recovering from an injury. So I came back to spring training. My velo was way down. I wasn't very sharp.
Yeah.
And then COVID happened. I go home. I kept throwing live to hitters like the whole like those 2 months we were gone, and
that
my velo kicked back up about 4 or 5 miles an hour. And then when we had the second spring training in Anaheim, I was pitching like mid-season form, and I think that gave me a second opportunity to show them what I got. And
yeah,
I made the team, but I wouldn't have made it had it been out of regular spring training.
Sure.
But you know, I was glad I was there, and
yeah. Pitchers fielding practice. You have a reputation. You're very good at it. What's the key to that? Is that just simply being in a good position when you're coming off the mound, or is there? I mean, what's worked for you there?
You know, that's something I've always taken pride in. Just, you know, field ball, throwing the ball. I throw from my arm slot that I throw off the mound. That's how we originally found my arm slot. Was I was doing PFP, and the pitching coordinator was like, "You look better when you throw like that than you do when you." Trying to
yeah,
pitch.
Interesting.
So we tried to just do that off the mound, and so it's something I've been comfortable doing, and I don't know, just lots of reps.
Yeah. All right. This is a random one. I think I heard you're trying to get your daughter to all 30 baseball parks. Is that you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how many has she been to? How old is she, first of all? How many has she been to?
So my daughter's 18 months old, and she's been to 18 stadiums.
Oh, my goodness. One
yeah.
a month.
Yeah, well, she's... Last year she knocked off like 8 or 9 or
sure.
something. We've got another 8 or 9 this year. And,
are you counting in utero, or is this just since she's been born?
Not in utero.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah, my wife's still missing about 10 stadiums.
Okay.
Or 8 to 10 stadiums, and I personally am missing about 5 or 6.
Okay.
So, I mean, every time there's a new stadium on the schedule, she plans everything to like
sure.
come on out.
Sure.
And I don't know, it's been fun. We take a photo, and eventually, when we're all done, hopefully, we've got 30 photos of me, the baby, and the
yeah.
mom all at every stadium.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
All right, man. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
All right.